Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We welcome you, whatever time and wherever in the world you are listening. We are pleased you have found us. You are now listening to Inside the Bunghole, a podcast taking you on a journey through wine. Together, we will learn more about this wonderful elixir of life. So raise your glass to welcome your hosts and partners in wine, Pam and James. You are now Inside the Bunghole.
Well, we are back inside the bunghole, and we are on our mission to Valle de Guadalupe.
Yes.
And we are here visiting with Kristen at Lechuza, which is one of the, it's a beautiful, beautiful tasting room. And it is, we're going to try some great wine. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And James, of course.
Yes, I'm here.
So let's find out a little bit about what a Southern California girl, blondie girl's doing down in Valle de Guadalupe.
Yeah, no, so I came here like most transplants here in Valle, and it's just the seek of being able to figure out how to drink good wine and make a living from it. I think that the community here is provided a lot more opportunities than maybe I could be able to do in other places. So this being a landing place has definitely worked out for us.
And then, so how did you end up here? You said was your father a winemaker or?
Yeah, so my dad was actually a janitor. And he, when my brother and I were finishing college, he wanted to find a place that he would someday retire. And he loved this place in Calistoga where him and my mom would go and rent these little cabanas. And they had a really nice dinner at a restaurant here in Valle. And, you know, we always traveled through Valle. But after having this dinner, they said, hey, maybe this could be a place where we retire. So they came back the next morning, saw lots for sale right next door to Restaurant Laja, and the neighbor said, oh, the lots with the lechuzas, the lots with the little owls. And so they purchased the property, and then the neighbor convinced my dad to completely bail out on the casita idea and plant vines instead. The joke was, do you really want to make scones for people? And my dad says, no, I want to drink with them. So planted the vines in 2005, and then he went up to UC Davis and did the extension program. And then 2007 was the first vintage of the house here, and it was a weekend hobby that quickly started spiraling out of control. My mom gave us two options, sell the wine or sell the ranch. And selling the wine was a much more feasible option. And so my husband and I were living in Santa Barbara, newlyweds, no children at the time. I was working three jobs, and we were just kind of treading water. And so Chef Drew Deckman here in Valle had a pop-up restaurant at the time, and he was one of my dad's best friends, and convinced my dad to convince us to quit our jobs, move down here, and turn it into a business. So in 2013, we opened to the public and learned everything on site. My husband, who was a working cowboy at the time, took over the farming and learned basically all of the fundamentals of the hard labor. And then I, in conjunction, started working with my dad in the lab and in the cellar, in the barrel room, and slowly but surely, with every experience, gained more knowledge. And now my husband and I run the program here.
Now, was when he found this area and said, oh, good place to retire, was the wine scene already kind of booming, or was it just starting to get silly?
Well, it for sure wasn't at the capacity that it is now. I think when we officially became a vineyard, we were like 65. So, and now I believe there's over 200.
Someone even said 300.
Yeah,
there could be.
Yeah.
So now there are quite a bit more. When we first opened our tasting room, we used to put balloons on our sign outside, and we were the gringos waving to people on the highway, like, come on in. And one of the neighbors joked with us, saying, ah, look, at the gringos are having a garage sale again. we definitely didn't have the traffic that we do now. We operated only by appointments. It was just my husband and I, and then my parents would help us on the weekends. I mean, I don't want to dismiss the fact that they put in a lot of hard work. If it wasn't for everything that they did, I wouldn't have wine to pour when we opened the doors. Yeah. Or
I imagine your husband's background being you said a professional cowboy, pretty much, a rancher. Did it just go to when you guys brought it to another level? Your background was food and
hospitality.
Beverage.
Yeah. So food and beverage. So I started in culinary school and worked back of the house for a couple years and realized how challenging that was. I'm cool with working long hours and little pay, but without being able to see the expressions of people's faces,
yes.
I think it's those of us that are in these positions, it's a little bit self-serving. We want people to love what we do. And so I moved to front of the house, and when I had moved down here, I was working at Bacara Resort and Spa. Yeah.
So, and where did you pick up Spanish? You speak Spanish. I hear you're thrown out. Uh-huh.
I'm getting better. My stepmom is Colombian, and so Spanish was always kind of the adult speak, because when she moved to California, it's amazing how Americans generally have a hard time with other languages being spoken in America. So, and she did with all of her might to learn English and only speak English, because now she's in America. So I don't think that I got as much Spanish at the house as probably my children do now. But if anybody has worked in hospitality in California, you know that you have to have a certain level of communication. And then moving down here, little by little, I'm learning. But there's not as much of that aggression of, you're in Mexico, you speak Spanish.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was kind of hoping that people were a little bit harsher on me and not so easy, and maybe it would be a lot better than it is now. Mm. But also my children, who are 2 and 6, were born here, and so their primary language is Spanish. So if I don't know something, Royal's my little Google Translate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. So they go to school, the 6-year-old.
Both of them goes to school here
yeah. And awesome. How has that been, moving and raising a family along with a crazy career as a winemaker?
Yeah.
The raising a family out here.
Probably elsewhere it would be really hard. But here you have the support of the community. You have people that want you to be successful. You have people who are going to love your children as yours when you're not able to be with them. I live on the ranch. So for example, my son was sick this morning, so I was able to be with him and then come over here. But there's a lot more opportunities. And you know, the culture out here is you eat when you're hungry, you sleep when you're tired, but also you have more abilities to step up and do the parent role, sit at the dinner table every night, do all of those things. But then you also have the ability to work. And people out here, especially my team, everybody fills a very supportive role. We all try to learn each other's strengths and grow from there. I don't think that any winemaker can be successful on their own. It's all about the village that you have, and the culture down here is a lot more than just work. We are family.
And I always say it takes a village to raise a grape.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're the gentleman that was just over here pouring for us.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit about his background and what he's trying to accomplish, and you're helping him to accomplish.
Yeah. So Armando has been on our team now for almost 4 years. So we brought him on when I found out that my daughter was due in the middle of harvest.
Oh, boy.
So not only did we do all of the tastings ourselves, the farmings ourselves, the fermentations. But now I had a child who was going to be born in the middle of October. So poor timing on our end. And he was our favorite bartender in town. And so my husband always says, we have to hire him. We have to hire him. And I always said, I can't afford him. And then it came to the quick decision of I needed to figure out how to afford him.
Yes. Necessity.
Yeah. And he, Armando, just has one of those spirits that you're born with or you're not. And because he has that, even though he came into this with very little wine knowledge, we've put him through a couple of programs. Right now he's entering in a program for professional wine pouring. He wants to get his somm. All of our blending sessions before bottling, he participates. Why? Because he's a front line. I want him to know exactly what he's talking about when he's presenting it. I mean, if I cannot be the voice to the people who receive my wine, I for sure want the person who's supporting me to have knowledge. And so he's taken on a lead, and this year he will I'll sponsor his first barrel. But I want to be around successful people. I want to be around smart people. I want to be around people who are kind and self-starters. And because of his dedication to my family's brand, we've been able to grow to the place we are now. So all boats rise with the tide.
Now you learned tasting and all the back of the house, if you will.
Yeah.
All on your own, pretty much?
Well, and I also worked with Doug Marjoram and Mitchell Shervin up in Santa Barbara. I helped reopen Wine Cask in the 2000s. I don't even remember what year, but working under Doug he is a winemaker, and working at the Wine Cask, we were exposed to so many different wines, but also they really invested in us as a team to meet the winemakers, figure out the process, because once again, we have to be ambassadors. So I fell in love with wine on more of the hospitality end, the presenting it to people, but also on the consuming end. And so I think it's really important because wine has to be a balance between art and science.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to achieve an end goal when you listen to what people are looking for.
Yeah.
And speaking of wine.
Should we take a quick break and then come back and start tasting?
I think so, because I'm getting thirsty.
Yes. He's always the one that says, we're tasting, right? So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back, we'll taste, and you can explain your wines, and we'll go from there.
There you have it.
We'll be right back.
If you want to know more about Inside the Bunghole, join us on all our social media platforms. You can get a revisit and view all the latest posts, giveaways, and information on this podcast. Simply search Inside the Bunghole on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Like, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment. We would love to hear from you. Or you can email us at insidethebunghole@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and visit our website at insidethebunghole.buzzsprout.com, where you can always find our latest podcast and past episodes. Cheers!
We're back, sitting here talking with Kristen of La Chuza in Valle de Guadalupe, and we're going to be tasting some of her wine,
So the first one here is the Royal Blush. My son's name is Royal, and it's a wine that my dad started making the year he was born. He was born in 2015, but in 2014, he worked in Argentina for three months during the harvest, and he learned about sangrados, or bleed-offs, from the red fermentation. And by doing a bleed-off, you have a better concentration on the red grapes with the skin and the seeds, which gives it tannin structure and whatnot to lend itself to longer barrel aging. But that byproduct, that 10 to 15% that we bleed off, is what we use for our rosé. So it's a lot of mini fermentations. It's composed of the three main grapes that we work with, Cab, Merlot, and Tempranillo.
In this one, this is the three, yeah. The three that make, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you said your dad, the first year you put this out was?
2015.
Yeah. And really, like, blushes and rosés have just gone nuts.
Well,
and they're great. I mean, I don't know why we weren't, you know, White Zinfandel was the only thing for a while.
Surely.
Yeah.
Every year this wine changes because it is a sangrado. 2019 was a more temperate climate, so that's why this one has more of a provincial style. It's a true light rosé.
Yes.
Whereas the 2020 we're about to bottle kind of looks like a slice of watermelon.
Really?
And that's because we had really hot heat waves, which gave us more sort of color extraction. And so the idea here is I want a rosé that's fermented dry, because when you pair it with spicy things, sweet, it's a little bit more challenging. I tried to do it lower in alcohol. I want it to be fruit forward. I like nice body to it, but I also want it to be a nice start to a tasting.
Oh, it's beautiful. It really is.
Thank you.
Very nice.
The color's gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, everything about it is.
Yeah, so this would go great with, we have a lot of fresh shellfish here, so chocolate clams, even like
glass.
An aguachile. Yeah, in the glass. Yeah, I always hope that the wine is great on its own, but I think my culinary background allows me to really think of it as the final destination. You know, if I could sit down and drink this, what would be my ideal situation?
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And food is usually involved, especially
yes.
here.
Sure,
we're
sure.
Spoiled.
You know, and the food out here, the food scene is huge as well. So,
yeah.
So we just. Some friends of ours who recommended that we come talk to you, Melissa and Scott, have been trying to get us to come down here for years.
Got to go to Mexico.
Couple, at least.
There's amazing wines in Mexico.
Yeah.
Really?
And they're like, not only the wine, but the food scene is on fire.
Yeah.
And there's some great restaurants around here.
Yeah.
And how do you distribute your wine? Do you distribute through, are you in local restaurants, and then do you have any distribution in LA or in California?
Yeah, sure. No, we've got a few different pipelines that we work with. Our biggest issue is inventory. So I don't want to be everywhere just because I don't have the volume to suffice. So a lot of our distribution is straight to consumer or via our online store for United States for folks. Because when you come down here to Mexico, having the ability to only transport back 1 liter can sometimes be challenging. So we have a hub in Otay Mesa with a young lady, La Mision Associates, LMA Wines. She imports for us. She's a daughter of a winemaker. She figured out how to do it for her dad. And so in return, we have a hub that can do that. But yes, we're in a handful of restaurants and wine shops. Mostly it's just people who have had our wine and they say, this is my favorite bodega right down the street. Can you see if you can get your wines in there? Or yeah.
And then let's talk, what kind of barrels do you work with?
I do both American oak and French oak. Just kind of depends on the juice of the year.
And now we are getting poured this is the Vuelo?
Vuelo, yeah.
That's a beautiful color as well. God, your wines have wonderful colors to them.
Okay.
And Vuelo is Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay.
Yeah,
interesting.
Right? Weird.
Crazy.
Who does that?
Who does that? You do.
No, traditionally we only made Chardonnay, but after back-to-back farming years with poor yield, I went to all of my neighbors saying, hey, does anybody have Chardonnay? And two farmers said, I've got Sauv Blanc. So we fermented them separately. This is 2019 with the intentions of doing two separate bottlings, but they both had really light tropical qualities to them. So instead of splitting the market with two similar wines, I put them together almost like sisters. Like they each have their own personalities, but together I think it creates a really beautiful balance. So you have the tropical notes on the front from the Sauve Blanc. And then because we did Malo on the Chardonnay, you get the body and the mouthfeel and the longer finish. But I don't think that either of the varietals are too overpowering.
Yes, yeah.
So it's for me, so vuelo means to take flight. So instead of saying, oh, I can only work in this box, I only know Chardonnay, we took flight. very food-friendly wine also can drink very well on its own. But I think because you have both the brightness and the body, it can go for raw food preparations or prepared food, you know. I think I did an event a couple weeks ago with Javier Plasencia, and he did a white fish with a green curry with this and a succotash, and it was amazing.
That and I, you know, I don't think I've ever heard of a Sauvignon Blanc and a Chardonnay blend ever.
No. Right. Well, and also I want to create a lineup that is for us, right? I think sometimes wine gets put too high in a pedestal and people are so tied to
the rules.
Yeah, this is what it is. And that's what's fun about out here is that nobody's telling us to do anything. And at the end of the day, we just really want to make good wine. And so if you have a dinner party and you only want one white and one red, you definitely have your Sauve Blanc drinkers and your Chardonnay drinkers, and God forbid you give them one of the other.
Yes.
So this is like, I'm going to force you to like this other.
Yes, one. I love it. I love it.
Tell me your shopping process when you look for your grapes.
It starts with the farmers.
Starts with the farmers.
Yeah, and good ethical practices. Their ability to allow me to insert myself along the process.
Here comes that lady again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I even had one farmer that allowed me, for this one, to call the pick date on the Sauve Blanc because I was the one out there getting random grape samples, crushing it up in the car. I had my hydrometer there. I had my little test kit to test the total acidity and the pH because I have all of these formulas from my dad's notes.
Amazing.
That, okay, where are we at? How are we tracking it? And I really love lists and spreadsheets and Excel. And
she's a numbers girl.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just gives me comfort because farming is so unpredictable.
Yes.
However, if you can at least follow the trends, then you can say, okay, this is where the temperature is heading. Our numbers are dropping here and our numbers are rising here. But then you also have to go out there. You have to chew on the skin. You have to eat that seed. You have to see, you know, what is going to be impacting the final product.
Yes.
And so it's a lot of hands-on and just, you know, walking the fields at night and trying to figure out when it's going to be. But I definitely, I choose to align myself with people who have really excellent farming practices and that are open to me. Every harvest, ideally, I'm there an hour before the harvesters arrive. I set up a table with water and chips and, you know, a whole station for that because I understand that great wine is first made in the fields.
Yeah.
It's just our ability not to screw it up.
Well, and it seems like being that you're so hands-on, it's your name on the bottle. At the end of the day, it's your wine, and it needs to reflect you.
Yeah, but it's not only just my name. It's also the name of Baja California and Valle de Guadalupe. And if someone's first impression of Valle de Guadalupe is my wine and it's a bad impression, and I just stole the opportunity for my neighbor to present their wines, then all of a sudden, I'm not giving my neighbor, my community that's propelled me to this point, I'm not giving them a fair shot. That's not what we're trying to do. So there's a lot of self-filtering going into it. I mean, if it's not good enough, it just won't go to bottle.
Now you, so, and you source all of your grapes from Baja.
Yeah, so we have a small vineyard here. So we have 2.2 acres. We grow Merlot, Tempranillo, Nebbiolo, and Cabernet. Of course, they're my favorites because I get to walk and talk with them and see them go through the process. But a whole part of being a winemaker is also being a farmer. And if you have a year with a heat wave during fruit set, if you have Santa Ana winds during flowering, if you have late harvest rains, if you have wet mornings, all of these sorts of things will allow you to prepare. Am I going to have powdery mildew? Am I going to have botrytis? Am I going to have shatter? Am I going to have variants on the plants? You know, when do you call to add more water to the plant, or when do you cut the watering? You know, all of those play a role, and I think that it's important, just as science and art is to making wine, it is also, you know, farming and appreciating
absolutely
the what goes into the ingredients
and what God's going to throw at you, because you don't know.
No,
so just to tell the listening people, yesterday it was
sunny
and sunny and dry, and this morning we wake up and it's cold.
It's
and
really
foggy
cold. Yeah. No, a client told me it got up to 99 degrees yesterday when they got here. And then my husband went to get ice for the taste room this morning, and that got down to 53 degrees this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's breezy and it's misty, but it's supposed to spike back up in the 90s again. So that will help dry out. We don't have ripening fruit yet. So we basically just have to maintain the vines for powdery mildew. It's a lot more dangerous when you have grapes.
Yes.
And sweetness, you know.
Yeah.
If you can't sleep at night, do you count sheep or do you count grapes?
I drink.
There you go. Yes, that's the right answer.
I often don't sleep at night. We're in the process of getting ready to bottle. And it's been a long process, but it's nerve-wracking because once you put that cork in, it is what it is.
Yeah. It is what it is.
And woof, man, it's like sending your child off to college.
Yeah.
You know, like, I hope I prepared him for this.
Yes,
you know,
I
hope the world loves it as much as I do.
Who designed your labels?
Oh, my cousins.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a company in San Diego called Brand. And so they have been working with us since the very beginning. Everything is house done.
And
Lechuza means little owl.
Yeah. It's a little ground owl that's indigenous to northern Baja and southern California. So my parents tried to do, my brother from Berkeley and my dad tried to do an underground habitat, turned into a squirrel den fast. So that was very counterproductive.
Owls are lucky. They're lucky. They're a symbol of luck and magic.
Yeah, he's a magician on the side, so.
You are. Mm-hmm. You gotta teach me some tricks.
Yes.
So let's take another quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about how people can find out more about you and your winery and all that good stuff.
We'll wrap it up.
So we'll be back in just a minute.
If you want to know more about Inside the Bunghole, join us on all our social media platforms. You can get a revisit and view all the latest posts, giveaways, and information on this podcast. Simply search Inside the Bunghole on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Like, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment. We would love to hear from you. Or you can email us at insidethebunghole@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and visit our website at insidethebunghole.buzzsprout.com, where you can always find our latest podcast and past episodes. Cheers!
Welcome back. We're here
at
Lechuza in Valle de Guadalupe talking with Kristen, the winemaker.
You know what Lechuza means?
It means owl. We found out owls.
Yeah.
Owls. And we were just talking over the break about your dad and how he kind of manifests, like, and when you see an owl, it's kind of like, hi, Dad.
Yeah.
And awesome. We were talking about how he's always kind of been into wine and been to many wine regions.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, so for my dad, he, you know, as he grew in his career and became more in the corporate world, going out and getting a nice bottle of wine was always something, you know, you could have these lunches and, you know, that's he fell in love with Ronbauer Chardonnay in the 80s. And then he fell in love with, you know, all of these different wine regions. When I graduated college, he took me to Provence and then Tuscany, and we got to do all those things. And when it was my 25th birthday, we got to go to, the French Laundry and do a whole tasting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then in 2015, Thomas Keller had written out to us, and I was able to fly up and curate the section for Mexico for the French Laundry for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's
a huge honor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really nice. And he just picked up this wine, which
yes.
is,
oh,
yep.
This is our 2016 Cabernet. It's a little bit on the cooler side.
I love the color.
Oh, thank you. So, you know, it's not a Napa Cab. It is a Mexico Cab. We don't have super, super grippy over-extracted. My hopes is that it has the balance of elegance and structure.
That is elegant. Elegant is a good word for this.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, my joke is that I give family members all different wines in my lineup. And so I always refer to the Cab as my assertive wife. I want it to feel like when you come home for Christmas during the holidays and you get all of those baking spices, but you also can like curl up to the fireplace with a cashmere blanket. You know, I want it to have those comfortable feelings of Cab, but also have the ability to pair with the campestre cooking out here.
Yeah, and I was going to say, what would you pair this with?
So last night I was at Javier Plasencia's. He's got a braised beef rib with a mole on it.
Yes,
oh
fat.
My God. Mm. Yeah. Oh my God, you're making me hungry.
Yeah,
I have this one. I can almost taste be... through the wine.
Yeah, I have a girlfriend, Karen Barnett, that had Small Bar in San Diego, and she did braised oxtail with a horseradish polenta with this. So it was amazing. But also like a good book.
Yeah,
okay. Exactly.
Yeah, sitting by the fire on a chilly morning.
Yeah.
Changing a tire on a car.
Yeah.
Perfect.
In a camel back up a mountain.
You must be happy with this.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think this is also our last weekend that we're pouring it. I think we're down to 6 cases. We only do about 100, between 110 and 150 cases of our reserve wines, because this was 2016. This was the last year my dad was with us. This is
special.
A harvest of 4 different Cab lots. One is here, 2 are from other neighbors here in Bayeux, and 1 is from the south. The vineyard from the south, this was the last vineyard that the last year we were able to work with these grapes because they were caned, pruned, and they only yielded 2 to 3 clusters per plant. Mm. unfortunately, they replanted that lot, so... But it's fun. One of the lots here in Bayeux that went into this, a neighbor had an extra ton and it was about to rain and we were already processing Cab that day. So he called my dad and so we stopped destemming. We all went out there with our raincoats on and shears and pulled in 2.2 tons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dynamite wine.
Thanks.
Dynamite.
I just love and how hands on, like you're hands on in every aspect of being like, a wine owner, wine maker, farmer,
wine mom, wine wife.
Yeah.
I even notice on your wall you have a little onesies. You got little baby.
No, everything that's here is purely selfish because I don't get a chance to go shopping. So as you know, the weather here in Valle, you need layers. So I have windbreakers and heavy sweaters and lighter sweaters. I've got heavier jackets. And then I also have kids stuff because when you're out and about, kids destroy things, especially their clothes first. So I figured if a parent is here drinking wine and their child makes a mess, well, got some options for
you.
You
got some clothing.
Yeah.
So do you have a wine club, or how does that work? I don't know how that works in, you know,
how can someone
Mexico.
get this wine? How can someone from England, let's say, get a bottle of this?
Ooh, see, that's a tough one. That is a tough one.
First they're going to hear about it.
They better just get on a plane and come out here.
Absolutely.
I highly recommend that, for sure. We're working on that. We do have a wine store for California state residents. But, you know, we are looking to find places that have distributions to other areas. The hard part is when you only make 110 cases, it's very hard to allocate 10 cases to sit somewhere just in case.
Just in case.
Yeah.
But so you are small production.
Yeah.
Do you have the wine club thing? Is that because you can only take one bottle or one liter out?
Well, I mean, we'll get there. I mean, we're all trying to figure out the legalities. It's so hard because everybody loves wine, but unless you make over 5,000 cases to get all of the permissions to ship and all of that, it becomes quite cumbersome. But there's a lot of us small producers that are hopefully working to try to find some solutions together. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But like I said, you know, I still want to sit at the table with my kids every night.
Yes.
And being that my daughter's 2.5, she's becoming a little bit more self-sufficient on things. But every year we're trying to grow our program, but we have to make sure that we have everybody supported in the right spots. We have to make sure that we can still be hands-on in every area.
Yeah.
Because once you stop, then it loses why we're doing this.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure you will be able to see our stuff in more places eventually. But as of right now, we do about 80% direct-to-consumer through the tasting room.
Yep.
And because we want to meet people. I want to tell you that this is 4 years of my life in your glass.
Yes.
I want to tell you that I made this with complete intention.
I want to tell you that I was going into labor with a whole entire field full of them.
Yeah.
We harvested Nebbiolo the day before Ryder was born and Cabernet 2 days after she was born. My husband, I had to do winemaking from abroad, you know. My husband was over at the bodega sending me numbers, and it was a fun year, 2018, because I was doing everything. I was able to kind of focus on the numbers without having to be like, okay, where are we at on Pampa Rosaire? What's the temperature on that? Things were brought to me. So, yeah, it's a whole process. But as well, all of our team is becoming a lot more educated, and they're able to help fill in the gaps, and I trust them. So, you know, we'll get there.
Well, the thought for the day is get your butts down to Valle and come into La Chuza and taste these wines. They're beautiful.
Amazing.
You do have a website.
We
if
do.
If you want to find out more about what's going on.
Yeah, well, we do all social media and website. We're vinoslechuza.com. And we have all kinds of stuff going on, and we try to be as inclusive as possible. Because like I said, the wine that we're trying to make is wine for everybody.
Yeah.
It's not just for your grandparents anymore.
I'm amazed at the quality of the wines we've been tasting. Just absolutely blown away.
I think when people are looking to do it as a money-making machine, like it's like having a puppy mill, right? It's just not a healthy way to go about it.
Yeah.
However, if you work with great intention and authenticity and transparency, then, you know, you'll make great things.
Be
good. Yeah, it'll speak for itself.
If I gave you a batch of grapes and someone else the same batch of grapes and came back, you know, a year later and taste it, it's going to be different.
Absolutely. That's what's fun about
it's chemistry. Oh, it's chemistry.
Well, it's
farming.
Chemistry. It's art. It's art. Chemistry. It's
calculated risks. You know,
crossing your fingers.
A whole lot of brain.
Well,
yeah.
Because you can, yeah, you, like you said, you cork it and that's it.
It's in the bottle and there's no turning back.
What's the process when you're in the bunghole with your thief and stuff? What are you dialing? Is there a last minute turn back, change it, or is it going in? Is that how you're measuring it, where it's going?
For sure. Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to follow the evolution. You can't just put it in the line, close the bung, or put it in the barrel, close the bung, and just be like, hope it works out, you know? If you start seeing things going astray, but that's why you have to love on it. I always refer to the barrels as like individual children. I never homogenize them. You have the same mom and dad, but different children. They have different characteristics. So you have to love, support them, nurture them, and then also see if things do start turning before things become a huge issue, you have the opportunities to turn them back on track, you know, with a little bit of love, a little bit of nurturing, back to the science. Let's follow those numbers. Let's make sure that we're where we need to be. But it's not just blind faith. I mean, that's just not how winemaking works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you still refer to some of your dad's notes? You said your dad made notes.
Oh, for sure. All the time. My dad was ridiculous person in sending emails and files and budgets, and I didn't get it. I mean, I remember there was one time where I said to him, I was like, dude, this is not fun. Like, come on, man. I'm your daughter. This is like, I changed my whole life for you. And there's once again my elitist, you know,
yes,
privileged personality. Like, what is going on? But now in his absence, I'm able to you're like, aha, okay, I get it. Thank you so much for making me put together this workbook. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Because when it is harvest, you don't know if it's 6 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock at night. You have no idea the last time you ate. And if without good notes, then you're unable to say, okay, this is the situations we are happened. This is how we troubleshooted it. Did it work out or not? But it's not just also my dad's notes. It's also all of my neighbors.
Yeah.
And so to be able to say, I got these grapes in and these are my numbers and I'm screwed. And like, no, same thing happened to me.
Yeah. It's a community,
yeah.
A community. It goes back to, it takes a village.
Yeah.
Well, I can't tell you how amazing this has been. The wines are crazy good.
Thank you.
And anybody who's listening, reach out to Kristen.
Yeah, welcome.
And come on down. And we will... It's been so much fun for us coming down here, and we look forward to another trip soon.
Cool.
And thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next time inside the bunghole.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank See you,
you
soon.
Yes.
If you want to know more about Inside the Bunghole, join us on all our social media platforms. You can get a revisit and view all the latest posts, giveaways, and information on this podcast. Simply search Inside the Bunghole on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Like, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment. We would love to hear from you. Or you can email us at insidethebunghole@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and visit our website at insidethebunghole.buzzsprout.com, where you can always find our latest podcast and past episodes. Cheers!